Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Lee Hutchison, host of Filibuster, and I'm joining you for a little special announcement before we kick off today's episode. If any of you follow us on social media, you'll have recently seen that we've been hit by a legal claim. Fortunately, we can't go into the specifics of the amount, but what they're asking for is less than it would cost to go to court, and they know that. But the Nerd Party is a not-for-profit, and it's just a group of nerds like myself, Tristan, Matt, Mike, everyone, just talking about nerdy things. We unfortunately don't have insurance for something like this, and we need your help to fight this and to battle this predatory legal practices that have hit us. This could happen to anyone. If you're listening and you've got a podcast, it could easily happen to you. If you're a listener of podcasts, it's very possible that your favourite show could be hit with something like this. The amount we're asking for will help go towards fighting that battle, but every cent, dollar, anything will go towards that legal cost. A lot of you have listened to the Nerd Party for several years, and we've never asked for anything like this before. Usually we just ask for a share of or a like on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever, but today we're asking for something a bit more than that. So anything that you can donate, please go to gofundme.com/thenerdparty and use the hashtag TNPFight to spread the word. Help us out. It will truly make a difference. Now, enjoy the show.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm your regular host, Lee Hutchison, and I'm joined again by Dallas King. How are you, Dallas?
I'm very well, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. We're recording this episode before we have the chance to see Avengers Infinity War preview on Tuesday, but this episode will come out after there's been a bit of chat about that. So this is a kind of one of these odd temporal anomaly kind of episodes, so I'm very excited to be joined again by you. So how have you been? It's been a few weeks since we've been able to record something.
No, I've been good. I've been listening to all the Road to Infinity War filibusters, and I've started my rewatch of the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well. So I'm just finished Ant-Man this morning, so I'm about to launch into Phase 3 and should hopefully be able to get it all. I certainly won't get it done by Tuesday, but certainly we'll get them all rewatched by the time it officially comes out on the 26th. So.
I know, I feel for you. Like, we did the spreadsheet for this Road to Infinity War all the way in November, even though we're kind of recording the episodes now. But there's a space with your name on it for Thor, Ragnarok, and Black Panther if you ever want it. So we'll keep that nice and warm for you.
Okay, yeah, no, I think I might be able to do that, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, what we're going to be kind of doing today is just sort of talking about some of the movies we've been catching recently, and some of them are certainly, you know, been movies we've both been looking forward to or have been sort of kind of expecting. And you were obviously talking about you've just been watching the MCU. I think I saw a tweet this week that said, "I promise I'm not trying to police anyone's life choices, but seriously, all you guys who are rewatching the entire MCU, you know there's like all these other movies, right?" And my view on that is it's possible to do both. And you've just mentioned there, you've just recently watched Ant-Man. This morning I finished Avengers Assemble and Iron Man 3. But we've also been watching new movies as well. So it is, in fact, possible to do both. So we're going to kind of dive into some of those original movies today. And I think the first and only place to really start is Ghost Stories. I know this was a movie you mentioned on our Glasgow Film Festival episode that you were so excited to see, but unfortunately, due to the snow, you missed out on. So obviously this movie was previously a play, and I feel you're the expert here. You've seen the play, you've seen the movie. Kind of, I want to hear about your first sort of experience with Ghost Stories before we even kind of knew there could be a film coming along.
Okay, yeah, I've seen the play. I saw it twice, actually. I enjoyed it so much the first time that I actually took a friend to go and see it the second time, because I think, as you've known, having seen the film as well, it's a film that potentially benefits from a second viewing, and the play actually benefits from a second viewing because you start looking out for certain elements of it. And I think I saw it because I think I'd heard it with good reviews, and also because of the people involved, Andy Nyman, who's worked on sort of Derren Brown stage shows and on television series, and Jeremy Dyson, who's one of the co-creators of the League of Gentlemen. He's more of the writer, though. He's one that doesn't appear on screen, but the sort of sense of humour and the sort of he's clearly a fan of horror and stuff like that, with the influences that have gone into League of Gentlemen. So I wanted to go and see it, and I was really sort of blown away by the play. The play does differ slightly in the sort of framing device of the stories that are told in compared to the film. It had to be done slightly differently. But I was excited to see how they transferred it to the big screen. And I, for one, thought that it was generally successful in replicating the formula of it.
For anyone that's probably maybe not seen the play, or I think it'd be almost impossible at this stage not to have seen the kind of saturation of trailers, adverts, promos. It's on the side of nearly every single bus here in Edinburgh. Do you want to sort of give people perhaps a bit of a kind of brief summary of the sort of story and what kind of this sort of unique kind of plot that they've kind of got with ghost stories?
Okay, the plot is essentially there's a paranormal debunker called Professor Philip Goodman, and he sort of goes around sort of basically going into these sort of shows with psychics and stuff and basically exposing them for the frauds that they are. He doesn't believe in the paranormal and is firmly against it. And he's given three cases by a formal paranormal expert and is asked to explain them because this guy just couldn't. And he's on his deathbed and he wants to be told that, you know, there is no existence afterlife and there's no paranormal, and he wants to be sure that, because these were three cases that he couldn't explain. So Dr. Philip Goodman goes to three different people and they tell them their stories of sort of horror and experiences with the supernatural, and there's three stories: a night watchman who experiences something one night on a late shift, a student who's driving through the woods and experiences something, and then finally a sort of smarmy businessman who is plagued by a poltergeist in his house. And the three stories are all sort of disconnected, sort of individual stories, but there's as the film goes on and as the play went on, you start to realise that all three are maybe slightly more connected than what we initially might believe.
So with that, obviously you saw the play. Was there much difference between sort of the play and the film in terms of story alone at this stage?
In the play, it's essentially the audience are experiencing a lecture given by the professor, who is basically telling everyone about these three cases that originally couldn't be explained, and he sort of sets about telling them, and then so he's at the front of the stage, and then slowly it sort of changes to the back of the stage where the person telling the story is then sort of put into the sort of the ghost story element of it. So in the film, you know, he starts interviewing the people and then it sort of transitions into a sort of standard sort of horror movie type element where they're in this place and they start to get freaked out. And I mean, the purpose of a good ghost story is basically you build up the tension, and there's this big jump scare, so a big release of tension and suspense at the end of it, and you get this big sort of scare that's meant to leave everyone sort of screaming and jumping up in the air. I mean, it works very well in the sort of theatrical aspect, and you know, I think it does work overall. It works quite well in the cinematic aspect, particularly the first story for me, the one with Paul Whitehouse, who actually surprised me because I thought he was fantastic in this. I've only really ever seen him in sort of comedy roles and stuff like The Fast Show and whatever, but I thought he was fantastic in a dramatic role as well. And it'd be interesting to see you, because I know you were slightly had a different view of it compared to me, didn't you?
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed, to be honest. It was a movie maybe I was just a little too hyped up with when I was watching sort of these trailers and adverts and hearing sort of kind of good word of mouth about the play. I thought, oh, I'm really excited for this. So I went to see it sandwiched between A Quiet Place and Thoroughbreds yesterday. And I came out of it sort of a bit disappointed. I agree, I thought the Paul Whitehouse storyline was the most exciting. I thought that, you know, I felt a bit uneasy, a bit, you know, nervous watching that. Whereas the other one sort of left me a bit cold and uninterested. And then when sort of the big reveal comes at the end, it sort of saves it a little bit for me. But I kind of came out just not plussed or kind of overly excited about it. I thought all the scares were the sort of jump scares, and apart from the first one, there didn't seem to be much sort of atmosphere or tension. It was just really disappointing, and I came out of it thinking, God, I wish I'd seen the stage play. And I'd read, a friend had seen it as well, and he said, oh, it was, he really liked it, because you would go into that and there'd be like, they would generate some smells and there would be, you know, breezes. It felt like a real interactive sort of experience, whereas sort of just watching this on the screen, I just sort of struggled to get into any of the stories. I thought, that's okay. It wasn't what I expected. I thought the stories would be more gripping, perhaps a bit interesting. And I love things about debunkers. You obviously mentioned Derren Brown. Derren Brown did a really good documentary a few years ago where it was all about this psychic that talks to the dead, and he you know, goes with him on sort of tour and watches how he does it and kind of tricks people, and hearing this guy, how he feels he's justified in claiming that he speaks to the dead. And I even actually ended up going to see him in Edinburgh to kind of get a kind of real view of it myself. But I just found it to be, you know, sadly disappointing, and it was just maybe just didn't live up to the hype for me. I thought, you know, out of the three movies I watched yesterday, it was the biggest letdown, sadly.
Yeah, no, I think I was coming at, I guess, from a different perspective, because I had seen the play, so I kind of knew where it was going to go, and so therefore I was looking for certain things along the way. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but I mean, there's certain numbers that sort of appear quite regularly in all the different stories that lead to something. But I thought, certainly in the play, the sort of final act where it all sort of comes together worked. It was more streamlined, and it sort of worked better in the play. I thought they still did a good job of trying to achieve that in the film, but there was just it did work slightly better in the play. But I thought that the overall the three stories were good. Although I think Alex Lothar in the second story, the young chap who's in, like, it's the end of the effing world and stuff like that, he is in danger, I think, of being typecast as a very strange sort of young man who's a potential psychopath and stuff like that. I think he needs to maybe do something, because everything I've seen him in, like Black Mirror and stuff like that, he's,
yeah, definitely,
he needs to maybe try and find something else. But I thought it was a good one overall, and I thought it was a good adaptation of the play. But I think, yeah, it just, I think the overall, the final act and the final story that sort of comes together, there's sort of more hints dropped in during the course of the play, because I think, yeah, for audiences just watching the film, that last bit maybe sort of comes out of nowhere and is a bit sort of like, oh, right, okay. Whereas there's little bits sort of come through in the play. But overall, I thought I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. And it was great to see sort of two great horror films come out the same weekend, because often, you know, it's a while that you get a one good horror film, but to get two in the same weekend, and it'd be interesting to see how both of them do at the box office, whether there is the marketplace for two of them.
I think it's, like, as you say, it's sort of a, even just getting two good horror movies, but sometimes even getting two good movies in a week can be a challenge. When you think this week we've got Ghost Stories, A Quiet Place, Love, Simon, Thoroughbreds, 120 Beats Per Minute, I think there's something else, is there not, out this week as well? Like, it just seems like now that the sort of the Easter holidays are somewhat kind of over, it's like, right, trying to cram in all these movies into sort of a limited schedule almost before Infinity War comes along.
I think so, yeah. Everyone is sort of running scared of Infinity War, and it's like, well, we better get out, you know, so at least some people watch them while they're waiting for Infinity War. Like, of course, that's assuming that people aren't just staying at home watching the Marvel movies up to Infinity War, of course.
Absolutely. It just seems like it's just one of these weeks where it's like the perfect advert for things like the Cineworld card, where you think, right, I can watch all these different movies at one time, and it's really exciting that there's so many good movies to watch this week. But it's, I fear that they're all going to kind of cannibalize each other. But I imagine A Quiet Place will come out on top. It was the, you know, the busier of the three screens I was in yesterday. But I think that's going to have sort of the universal appeal. It's got all this great word of mouth, and something like Love, Simon, I expect will do really well. But then perhaps movies where I wasn't maybe the biggest fan of Ghost Stories, it's sort of an original piece of cinema, as it were, even though it's adapted from a stage play. And I just see sort of movies like that, Thoroughbreds, 120 Beats Per Minute, sort of just falling kind of under sort of, you know, in the cinema 1 or 2 weeks and then gone, just because there's all these other movies that are just grabbing the attention. It seems a bit silly that they've all been crammed into this 1 week, really.
Yeah, no, I think it's a shame, and it depends. I mean, certain cinemas may only have them for certain screenings, because, I mean, I watched Journeyman last week, the Paddy Considine boxing film, and there was only one cinema in Aberdeen showing it, and it had one screening per night at 7:40, and that was it, and then it was gone. It was like, you've got seven opportunities to see this film in Aberdeen, and then that's it, you can't see it again. So I mean, I made sure to see it, and I thought it was a fantastic film, and it's those are the kind of films that you wish would get the opportunity to find a bigger audience, but it's something that, you know, people will have to try and find, you know, along the line at a later date. But I guess we'll see you know, what happens with all these films. But I think, yeah, I think Quiet Place will win the box office, because also, I mean, I guess it's for you, you know, seeing Ghost Stories after you see Quiet Place, nothing is going to be as good as Quiet Place. For me, I thought it was just a five-star classic.
Yeah, like, before we just even touch on that, all I have to say about Journeyman is, I live in, obviously, Edinburgh. It wasn't on at our Cineworld, wasn't on at the Cameo, wasn't on at the Film House, not on at the Dominion. It could have been on, perhaps, at the Odeon Review. I don't think so. It almost seems to have just totally skipped by Edinburgh altogether. So I'm incredibly jealous that you even got the one or two opportunities to see it in Aberdeen. It's really bizarre that we've got nothing really here of it. It's a shame, but we did get A Quiet Place, so you obviously touched upon it there that you were a big fan of it. What I've tried my best to sort of not go into this movie knowing too much out with the trailer. I saw that, I was sold by the concept. What was your expectations going into the movie, and obviously you enjoyed it. Why did you feel it sort of delivered to you then?
I mean, I went in with little to no expectations. I mean, having seen the trailer, I mean, it was the concept that sold it to me. I mean, this is a film which was produced by Michael Bay and directed by Jim from The Office, which is, I mean, actually surprisingly, that we actually, the two horror films out this week had Jim and Tim from The Office, because Martin Freeman's in Ghost Stories, so yeah, that's a weird connection there. But I mean, I didn't realise he'd really directed much before, but it was just, it was a concept. It was basically, you know, silence is survival, and there's these monsters which hunt by sound, and you have to remain as quiet as possible. I mean, there was that great Buffy episode Hush, which was done in a slightly different way, and yes, where the monsters actually removed people's voices so they couldn't scream and warn each other that it was happening. But for this, I mean, for me, it was really just the execution of it. I thought it was absolutely superb. I mean, it hit the ground running and then sort of never let up. It was just set piece after set piece after set piece. And I just thought it was just so well done. And I thought the actors were fantastic, and that it was the family bond that you really bought into, and you were actually, I don't know if it was like this in your screening, but our cinema screen, you could not hear anyone making any noise. You know, everyone was utterly silent. There was no mobile phones going, there was nobody talking, there was nobody eating popcorn and rustling and stuff like that. Everyone seemed as scared to make a sound in the screen as it was up on the big screen as well.
I wish my screener was okay. I had to actually move at the beginning of the movie. It kind of starts, and I was quite happy that the scene that was sort of heavily in the trailer with the NASA spaceship was within the first few minutes. Like, when I saw this sort of trailer originally, I thought, oh, that's probably going to be towards the end, that, you know, they're on this long journey and, you know, they're nearly there and this sort of thing happens. So I was glad that, like, they got that out of the way, and I felt like nearly everything from then onwards would be things that I hadn't seen in the trailer footage, so it would make it even more kind of nervous or exciting. And early in the movie, and I don't know what it was, but I could hear someone's watch ticking. I was like, oh god, this isn't good. And then I don't know what someone had, but whether they had new shoes on or not, and you know, you get that, and I don't know what they were doing, but all I just kept hearing was this, like, this squelchy noise, just like constant. And I was like, and you know when you're just trying to get into a movie, it's deathly quiet, and I felt like, oh my god, all I can hear is this noise. Oh, this is driving me mad. So I was like, right, I'll give it a few moments, and it would stop, then it would start again, and there's this couple like having some popcorn behind me, and one of them said a couple words to her partner. I was like, oh my god, right, I'm just gonna move. So I took my carrier bag from a new pair of jeans that I had, grabbed my coat, and went up towards sort of the back area. So thankfully it was like 10 to 12 in the morning, so it wasn't like a busy Saturday shift screen then. So when I got there, I was like, right, I'm just gonna settle here in the back. And thankfully it was pretty quiet up there, so I could sort of settle into the movie. And I pretty much found it relentlessly stressful to watch. I just felt really on edge and unnerved the whole time. And I've not really experienced that too often in the cinema. I think of Descent made me feel that way. And Sunshine, it was one of those movies I remembered sitting actually moving towards the edge of my seat physically. So it was really nice to have that sort of experience again in the cinema. So I was really impressed, even if the film hadn't been, you know, whatever, to get that experience, that feeling out in me was a success. So I was really impressed. So what was it like about the story, for example, that you really particularly enjoyed, and what were some of the standout moments for you that you can kind of talk about without perhaps spoiling it?
I mean, for me, I don't want to spoil anything, because there's a plot point in the thing which wasn't featured in the trailers, and it's a huge thing that basically sort of makes the audience question, oh my God, what would I do? In that it's sort of something that could basically threaten the entire family. And it leads up to, for me, what is the best sequence in film, where Emily Blunt is alone in the house and the father and the son have gone off sort of hunting for food and whatever. And there's a scene where basically the monsters attack and she's on her own and she has to stay quiet. And for me, it's probably the best sequence I've seen in a horror film for many, many years. I thought it was utterly terrifying. And it's like one of those, yeah, sort of nerve-shredding, white-knuckle sort of edge-of-your-seat sort of moments. And I just thought it was utterly fantastic. And I thought it was just the way that they sort of set everything up. I mean, there's a bit where basically something snags and there's an exposed nail, and there's a great shot. It just zooms in on this nail and you're like, okay, well, that's going to come back later. And you're just on the edge of your seat waiting. Well, every time someone goes into that room, you're thinking, oh God, it's going to happen. And then I just thought it was just so well sort of set up and so well executed that, yeah, for me, it's probably the best sort of horror film I've seen since It Follows a few years ago, which sort of had a similar sort of high concept thing of, you know, what would happen if, you know, this thing just keeps coming and keeps coming and keeps coming and will not stop. And I just thought it was, yeah, fantastically executed.
When I saw that nail for the first time, I had the same reaction as you, like, oh God. And I almost just sort of imagined this sort of Jaws theme starting to play there, like, dun. And I was like, oh no. Like, and it would just be when she's walking down the stairs, I was like, oh no, 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 please don't go down that stairs. And it was one of those moments when I was watching it, I kind of felt like, and I mean this in the best way, I was like, I wouldn't mind if the film ended now, because I just wanted to, like, just relax for a few moments. And I just thought that was such a great feeling. Like, and it wasn't in any sort of disrespect to the movie. It was like, this film is so effective. It's like, I feel so uncomfortable in my seat here. Like, I'm so stressed for this family. Please let me kind of let's end here. Let's leave it on a happy note or something like that. And I thought that was just so effective to kind of generate that sort of feeling in you, you know. And one thing, I mean, it's no spoiler, and I only really found out afterwards, was that the young daughter, Reagan, is actually played by a deaf actress, Millicent Simmons. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I thought that was really good to see her, you know, get a role in this sort of movie where she is a deaf girl and she genuinely is deaf. And it's silly things like that. You think, well, that's really impressive that they've been able to cast her. And, you know, for someone like John Krasinski, this is his, you know, first kind of major directorial movie, you know, to direct children and to direct someone, you know, that's deaf. I can imagine that presents some challenges. And I mean, I work with people with disabilities myself, and it's such a challenge to be able to communicate in a congruent level with someone where perhaps they've got a disability. And I would say that I think that's just incredible that he's managed to achieve that and taken that option when it would perhaps have been easier for him to say, yeah, just pretend to be deaf. But he's actually gone all the way out, and I think that's an incredible testament to him and the representation in this movie.
Yeah, no, I think I read something today about, yeah, he had to fight to cast her in the role, to get an actual deaf person in the role. And I'd seen her before, actually. She was in Wonderstruck, the mm-hmm. Todd Haynes one, which I saw at the Glasgow Film Festival, and again, she played a deaf woman in that. So, but I thought she was great. I thought the two children were both actually very good and not annoying, which can sometimes happen in horror films in particular. They're just so annoying that you would want them to die. But in this case, I didn't. I actually wanted them to survive. And I thought also the sound design team deserve an award, because I thought the sound mixing and the sound editing in this film was fantastic, especially when it ever went to the perspective of the deaf girl Regan, because there was no sound. It sort of cut out completely, and it felt, you know, just like that sort of tinny echoey that you get, and you're sort of seeing bits where, you know, she can't hear and you can see things moving behind her, and you're going, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh, what's gonna happen, what's gonna happen, and you're basically sort of willing, you know, them to survive. And I mean, that's the testament of a film, because sometimes you watch a horror film and you're like, you're wanting the monster or the killer to kill people, and this was completely the opposite. You're wanting this family to survive if possible, and that was a testament to the direction and the skill of the acting, I think.
Yeah, and it's just all the impressive choices. Like, you're dropped straight into this movie. You know, you open the first minute, it's like day 82, and I like things like that. Like, with a film like this, it never outstays its welcome. Like, you know, such limited dialogue, I'm sure for like some modern audiences it could be like, oh no, this is like perhaps not going to engage with someone, or they would perhaps get distracted and perhaps look at their mobile phones. So I really liked how it was like, right, it's a lean, mean running time, things don't need to be over explained, you're just thrown in with this family, and I really liked that. And I just felt like all the creative decisions here felt like all the right ones, that, you know, it's rare to come out of a movie not perhaps second guessing something or taking issue with something, thinking, well, maybe they should have done that approach. I was genuinely really, really impressed, and I think it's one of these movies that when I first saw the trailer I thought, that's genius. What a simple but great idea. Just like, you can't make noise or you'll die. Like, we see that in horror movies all the time, whether it's for 30 seconds or a moment, like the killer comes in the room, you're hiding, just be quiet. And that tension. And I just really like how they've just gone all in to do that. I think it's such a great idea. And I'm sure everyone's kicking themselves going, why didn't I think of this sooner? It's you know, absolutely fair play to the team behind this for putting that together.
Yeah, no, I had the same thought. I think I actually mentioned in my review that, yeah, it's one of those horror films that you go, it's an idea so simple that you wish you'd done it first. But even if I had thought of this, I don't think I could have done it as well as they have delivered this film. And I couldn't really fault it. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it's a film which left me with almost like a punching the air moment at the end. You're like, yes. It was just, I thought it was faultless for me.
Absolutely. So what other kind of movies have you kind of been catching lately? It's been sort of the Easter week kind of weeks have been happening. We've had quite a few movies, and we spoke about just this week. There seems to be so many out. So what's been kind of catching your attention lately at the cinema, or have you been catching up with it at home?
I'm trying to think. I think that's actually everything I've sort of seen recently, because I have been spending so much time. I think I've now watched, I think it's 12 or 13 of the Marvel films over the last 2 weeks. So that has taken up a lot of time. I did see the likes of like Pacific Rim Uprising, which is a film which does exactly what it says on the tin and has giant robots fighting giant monsters. And I couldn't really complain, because I thought John Boyega was just sort of pure charisma in that film, and I thought it was great. So I thought it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun, that one. You know, crazy sort of popcorn film, but a lot of fun.
That was one movie I just totally missed. It's like, I wasn't the biggest fan of the first one, so I kind of sort of, it slipped my kind of radar. I think it's still out, so I might catch it in the next kind of week or two, depending on the timeline. So, but one thing I definitely know we've both seen, and I'm really curious to get your opinion on it, because I think you were a fan of the book, is obviously Ready Player One. That was probably one of the big movies of sort of the Easter break, and seems to be generating a lot of opinion online. How did you sort of go into the movie? Had you read the book, and what were your expectations of Spielberg's return to sort of blockbuster cinema?
Oh yeah, I'd read the book a couple of years ago, so I was looking forward to it, because I liked the sort of concept, the sort of Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory style quest within the video game world. And for me, I thought they did a really good job of adapting it, because a lot of criticism about the film and the book in particular was it was just a string of pop culture references of, oh wait, do you remember this, oh look, I know about that. Mm-hmm. And apart from like the first sort of big action sequence, which features loads of different sort of characters driving loads of different famous vehicles from films and stuff like that, it sort of gets that out of the way and then sort of gets on with the story. And a lot of the references, sort of visual clues, so you can have a lot of fun sort of going, looking in the background and stuff like that, going, oh, there's such and such and there's such and such. But it's never done it sort of the exclusion of the audience who may not be aware of, you know, certain video games that from the 80s and stuff like that. So I thought that it was quite streamlined, and for me it features one of the best sequences of the year, the second quest where characters go into a certain film. I was like, I can't believe they're doing this. Oh my God. And it actually was done so well for me. I thought it was utterly fantastic. I know there's probably a few people who think it's sacrilege to have done what they did, but I thought, for me, I thought it was great.
I was almost the total opposite to you for this one again. I went to see the movie on my birthday a few weeks ago, and I'd never read the book. I almost sounds like I don't read books at all. I'm a non-fiction reader, I swear. So the Ready Player One book sort of passed me by, but it was one of those ones because I would class myself as a geek. People would say, oh, you would really like this book. You would really like this book. So, it, you know, when people tell me that, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll be the judge of that. And somehow I never get around to doing it. So I went to see the movie on my birthday. I think it officially came out that day, and that you could see it in 2D and not the 3D that had been on like the 28th of March or whatever. So I went to see it with my girlfriend, and I can quote her, like, I got a birthday card from her in the morning. She wasn't too excited for Ready Player One, and nor was I, but she was like, hope you have a good birthday and Ready Player One isn't too crap. So we went to see it, we had some breakfast and went along, and the trailers had done very little, if at all, for me when I went to see it. So when I went along, I was kind of perhaps in a bit of a negative frame of mind already. I was sort of like, okay, we'll see what happens. It's Steven Spielberg, I trust him. And I came out of it, and me and my girlfriend rarely agree on movies. We're usually polar opposite. And we both came out there, and you know, she's recently got a Cineworld card at the start of the year, and she's got a Letterbox now, and she'll come out and go, so how would you rate that on your Letterbox? And I was like, I'd give it a one. And she was like, me too. So that was a very rare kind of matchup for us. And I just really didn't like it at all. I found it really boring, to be honest. The story just didn't do much for me. The characters, you know, apart from Ben Mendelsohn, didn't care about them at all. I thought it looked really bland. The color scheme of like the big battle sequences didn't do much for me at all. My main worry going in was it was going to be like a sort of Big Bang Theory style thing where it's like people quoting like fiction and no context whatsoever to like each other, and like that's how you show like this is a big geeky world. But that really wasn't kind of there. So I was kind of that kind of fear was non-existent. It was just unenjoyable, and I found it to be a real slog to watch, and I could just feel myself fidgeting in my seat. I was genuinely disappointed that in the end that it felt like Spielberg sort of just dropped a bit of a clanger with this one for me.
I think I know what you mean. There was, for me, I actually felt that the Avatar performances were more interesting than the actors in real life for me. I thought that some of them, like Ty Sheridan, was actually almost had more personality within the video game than he did in the real life. So in that aspect, and I thought, Ben Mendelsohn was a bit sort of a corny, sort of hammy villain, yeah. But for me, I thought it was it passed it up. I think a lot of people were down in it based on the trailers and stuff, and I think of their apparent perceptions of the book and things like that. But I thought he did it. Spielberg actually did a better job of. I think it was better than people had of the negative opinion that people had when they were going in. But yeah, it's definitely not for everyone. So
yeah, so obviously, kind of like you were talking about, like your movie watching has been largely dominated by sort of the Marvel Cinematic rewatch, and obviously we haven't had a chance to get you onto our big Marvel rewatch show yet. So I'd love to know, you know, you've got a nice open forum here. What have you sort of learned two phases in? Like, is there sort of like we've probably all watched some of these movies multiple times, or maybe once or twice. What kind of movies have maybe caught you by surprise on the rewatch that you thought were maybe good at the time, don't hold up, or perhaps the other way around? And how are you feeling at this stage about Infinity War?
Well, I mean, it's looking back on it, you sort of get you sort of pick up on little things which may or may not have been there from the beginning and are now paying off. It's like in the first Iron Man, when it's like Jarvis sort of tells after Iron Man after the first fight, it's like, well, you know, it wasn't built for space travel. And then, you know, sort of going in the Avengers, you know, eventually that he's going to be actually going into space at sometimes and stuff. There's this little seeds planted that are looking that they may potentially pay off and stuff like that. But you do sort of see certain, you pick up on the tropes and stuff that you maybe didn't first time around, that, you know, sort of phase one was pretty much ending with two CGI people in metal suits hitting each other a lot. And then the second phase is large things falling from the sky onto large populated areas and stuff like that. But for me, I think, yeah, it's like phase one was sort of standard sort of origin story plots. And then phase two, they're getting a bit more confident and sort of playing around. So sort of Iron Man 3 is very sort of different to what has come before. Thor 2 for me is the weakest film out of all of them. But Winter Soldier for me is the best one in phase two. And I think the Russo brothers have sort of nailed exactly what the Marvel Universe needs. And I think they have directed the best action sequences for me across the whole thing. I think Winter Soldier's action is fantastic, and Civil War as well, which is the next film I've got to rewatch, and I'm really looking forward to it. That, up until now, I think has been my favourite one on first viewing, so it's going to be interesting to see if it holds up on the second viewing as well.
Yeah, like it's been quite exciting that originally I started watching these Marvel movies with my girlfriend. She's we've watched quite a few of them randomly out of order sort of in the previous few months, and I was like, right, I want to just kind of rewatch them all in order, or I'm going to hold out unless one of the cinema chains is going to do sort of a marathon. And I was genuinely, I'm still shocked and expect something to happen, but none of the chains sort of here in the UK at all are doing any Marvel marathons, which is very bizarre. Not even a double bill.
I don't think they will, because I was thinking about it when I saw that it was just Infinity War coming out, and it's like, it's difficult to know. You couldn't really put one film on before it, because which film do you choose? Because there's not really one specific film which will link directly into the start of Infinity, apart from Thor Ragnarok perhaps, but that's only just really at the very end. So unless you, it's an all or nothing thing really to do, you'd have to really screen all 18 films back to back. But then I think over here and possibly in the States is that issue of the Incredible Hulk being owned by Universal. That was not part of I think they did a marathon over in the US before Age of Ultron, and that wasn't involved. So yeah, it's an all or nothing, which is I think why everyone's sort of watching them at home, sort of either one a day or just, you know, whenever they can up into it.
Yeah, I'm still surprised, frankly, because I always think that I would have expected perhaps at a minimum sort of a triple bill, the Avengers movies, you know, into, you know, even if it doesn't all sort of string together without everything in between, I thought that's perhaps something that they would have done. You know, I think of some of the, before Age of Ultron, I went to an all-nighter. Well, I suppose I actually saw Age of Ultron at an early preview through like Show Film First. And then I went to an all-nighter starring Iron Man. So I kind of watched it all a bit out of sync. And then it started, did like Iron Man, skipped Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Captain America, Avengers, Iron Man 3. I can't remember if we got Thor the Dark World. I think we did, actually. Then it went into Captain America, Winter Soldier. And then it was Age of Ultron. We didn't get Guardians of the Galaxy. And then, you know, I think of all the other ones I got, like, there was a Captain America one where it was like Captain America, Avengers, Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron. Then it was into sort of Civil War. So there's always been some sort of combination of such, and that's maybe been a bit lacking recently. Some of these movies, I feel, haven't even had midnight releases. You know, Spider-Man Homecoming didn't get a midnight release. Thor didn't get one. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 did. Doctor Strange didn't. Civil War did. So it's sort of, before there was sort of a consistency that you would expect these to be sort of events, that you'd be in double bills, you'd be there for 9 o'clock, watch one and then go into another one. So it's been a bit disappointing that sort of epic feel hasn't been there. Now it's like, right, off we go for midnight and that's it. But I think, yeah, I would have liked to have seen some sort of event for these sorts of movies. But I think obviously we're lucky enough, we're going to the sort of fan preview, we get the 40 minutes on or 30 minutes 25 whatever it is. I'm probably, the way I'm going, it's probably gonna be about 10 minutes at this stage, but yeah, I'm really excited for this preview we're going to go see on Tuesday. It's going to be quite an exciting event, I think.
I think the footage is not, I don't think it will be the first chronological, say, 30 minutes of the film. I think there will be little scenes which are maybe out of sequence, because I know they don't want the plot to get out there and stuff like that. So I think it might be slightly sort of disjointed scenes, but just sort of showcasing the sort of overall vibe and feel for the film. But I think we'll get the sequence set in Edinburgh with Vision and Scarlet Witch, and I think it's going to be a very special screening, because it is in Edinburgh and everyone who's going has probably visited the Royal Mile for a couple of nights over the filming and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be exciting to see that on the big screen, surrounded by people who recognise their hometown and stuff like that. And yeah, I think it'll be great.
Absolutely, like, and I'm sure we'll touch on this later in the month. But what, you went along to some of that filming on the Royal Mile and sort of checked it out, and obviously you've got a book out about kind of film locations as well. So do you want to tell people a bit about your sort of experiences, and we can put in some links into some of the photos you've taken, and what was that like for you?
I really enjoyed it. I went along with a couple of mates, and we sort of stood around, we had dinner sort of because nothing much was happening, and then we sort of started hanging around the Royal Mile from around about 9 o'clock, and then one of my mates was like, oh no, I'm gonna have to go back, I've got to go see the kids, put them to bed and stuff like that. And I was like, you know that as soon as you leave something's gonna happen. He's like, yeah, no, I know. So yeah, he leaves, and then sort of 20 minutes later there's a massive explosion. So I sort of videoed it and then sent it to him going, haha, I told you. So I mean, we weren't close enough. We didn't actually get to see sort of like Elizabeth Olsen or whatever filming. But I think from the looks of what we saw, they were filming the sort of, it looks like a fight scene between Proxima Midnight and Scarlet Witch that takes place on the Royal Mile. And for me, sort of having, sort of knowing Edinburgh and seeing the footage, it actually is one of those films which geographically makes sense, in that it takes place on the sort of Royal Mile, Coburn Street and Waverley Station, which are all right next to each other. Because sometimes when you get a film that has been filmed in somewhere you know, and then when you see it on the big screen, you sort of have that thing where you're looking going, well, that makes no sense, because they're there and then suddenly over at the other end of the city and then they're back again. But this one actually does look like it geographically makes sense, which is good.
I always think, like, I never got along to any of the late night filming and stuff. I suppose I'm just always early to my bed. But it was quite surreal, because I go to a lot of meetings at Waverley Court, which is sort of next to the train station, and Coburn Street, it's like sort of the base of Edinburgh Council. So I remembered coming out of like that base one day, and I was like, huh, like there was just all of these film crews filming outside sort of the Science Museum, and it would be bizarre, kind of like I would sort of take a shortcut through Waverley Station to sort of get back to my office. And it would be so surreal seeing sort of the green screen there that was like there for weeks. There'd be times I'd even get a train, I'd be like, yeah, there's the Avengers set right behind me. It was sort of a a bizarre situation to be in, where you were like, oh, you could take it for granted that it was sort of, this movie was a backdrop to your daily commute and was going to be the backdrop to probably the most biggest earning movie of all time. It was utterly bizarre.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I actually saw it for the first time on the train going down for my stag do in Newcastle. We passed and I sort of managed, oh my God, what's happening? Oh, they're actually filming in Waverley Station. So I actually then arranged to go down the week after and spent the night there watching the filming and stuff like that. So yeah, never saw any filming in Waverley. I mean, they would have had the station under complete lockdown for that sequence. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people sort of hanging around watching the film out in the open and stuff like that. And I know that they, on Coburn Street, they basically took over a shop for a month and refitted it out as a kebab shop, which I mean sort of ties into the, I guess, that the Avengers still like shawarma. And it was like, because at that point you still didn't know, it's like, oh, they could just be filming in Edinburgh, you know, but it might be somewhere else on the final film. But there was a sign in the kebab shop that said, we will deep fry your kebab. So I was like, oh well, that settles it, it's definitely filmed in Scotland. So
yeah, like I remember even like it was just sort of surreal, like the whole sort of period of time, because I remembered coming out of like on the Royal Mile is where like the council tax offices are, and I'd recently just moved home and I needed them to update my form, And I remember coming out of that building one day, you know, doing the most tedious thing imaginable, and thinking, like, oh, there's all these huge cranes. Yeah, they're just filming the Avengers in my hometown. No big deal. And, like, even, I don't know who you would have got down, or it's not that there was anything to ever see there. But then, like, with Pinewood, obviously shipped up all this, like, equipment and everything from down in London. And, like, down near sort of Arthur's Seat, you know, near the Scottish Parliament, you had all these Pinewood things. We just, like, trucks and vans would just stay there over the night. And it was just absolutely crazy to think, like, oh, yeah, these are just the biggest, you know, films in the world. They're just, like, just being made here in Edinburgh. I think it's going to be... I'd give people a real sense of pride to see their city represented in this way. And I think, like they said, that, you know, I don't even know how they measure these things, but like the impact on the city was like, could be about like 10 million, something like that. It was genuinely impressive that, you know, even if it's only like 30 seconds of footage, the impact it's going to have on the city forever and tourism as well.
Yeah, no, I think I read somewhere that Edinburgh Council are wanting to have like a superhero weekend, the first weekend it's out, with local businesses should get behind it and do special offers for like people dressed up as superheroes or something like that. So it'd be interesting to see what they do. But I mean, they're really getting behind it. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, on the opening weekend, if they looked at the box office figures, I think Edinburgh will have a huge spike in terms of the amount of money that it makes in Edinburgh compared to the rest of the UK. I think people will be going out and going to see their home city on the big screen. So,
and obviously you've kind of sort of teased a bit of it on your sort of Instagram, on your Twitter feed, that you've got these little Marvel figures and are planning a bit of a trip to Edinburgh in the near future as well.
Yeah, no, I think once the film comes out, I'm going to head back down and sort of try and recreate some of the shots of the film in the actual locations that they take place. So I might even be able to start it early, since we might get some of that footage on Tuesday.
Absolutely, yeah, it'd be quite exciting. So that seems like, obviously this episode will come out after we have seen that footage, and we'll have some sort of reaction, kind of quick reaction sort of things to it on the website and probably the podcast then. But yeah, if people wanted to sort of, obviously you're going to be doing this sort of Marvel stuff in the near future, or kind of check out what your reaction was to sort of that footage, where will people be able to kind of find you online, Dallas, and kind of reach out to you?
Well, they can find me online on Twitter at champcelluloid, and I've got my blog championshipcelluloid.blogspot.com, and yeah, I've got all my reviews, and I've just started posting my MCU Road to Infinity War countdown on that as well. And yeah, we'll be doing something around the release of Infinity War, and it'll all be up on there.
Yeah, perfect. And you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. You can find the Nerd Party on Twitter as well at Join Nerd Party, Instagram at The Nerd Party, facebook.com/The Nerd Party. And we'll obviously be continuing our Marvel rewatch. And when we originally put the schedule together, it was designed around the American release date coming out in, I think it was early May. And then obviously with that being moved up, we'll have kind of double episodes kind of coming in the near future. So it'll be one on a Monday and a Wednesday, or a Wednesday and a Friday. So you'll be getting four movies, Marvel reviews kind of coming up at one time. So certainly something to keep your eyes open for. But thank you so much, Dallas, for coming on and proving that people can watch Marvel and other original movies at the same time. And we'll obviously be back again soon to discuss more things. So thanks you very much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.